Hi, welcome to Info Dumpies. My name's Brianne. I'm autistic, I have ADHD, my pronouns are she, her, and if you time travel to ancient Greece and they offer you breadsticks, it is imperative that you ask what kind of breadsticks they're talking about.
Hi, I'm Violet. I have ADHD. My pronouns are she, her, and the strangest sex toy I've ever owned was shaped like a duck, and the only reason I owned it was because my friend worked at a sex shop, and the box was sun damaged, and she was like, do you want this? Nobody wants this. And I was like, yeah, it's funny.
Was it called the fuck duck?
No. I think it was supposed to be a swan, but it looked very much like a duck, and it was bright pink.
Interesting.
If you had said, how would you think this is used? I could not tell you. It literally just looked like a duck.
Interesting.
Yeah. Like a smooth pink duck.
Yeah.
The sex duck. It's a real true fact about me. It's not a goof.
The sex duck. Well, I'm going to tell everyone off the bat, if you just had this on autoplay and it's playing your next episode and you haven't seen the title of this episode, today's Info Dumpies is a brief history of sex toys. And I would like to say this is our most not safe for work episode so far, but in the previous episode, I did talk about how two boy beetles will have sex by turning one of the other boy beetles' dick inside out and pushing it back up inside his body. So maybe this isn't the most not safe for work one we've had. Maybe not. Maybe not.
Yeah,
true.
Yeah, we've talked about some stuff on here, haven't we?
Yeah, yeah, which I think anyone who listened to today's lucky winner before listening to this show is not surprised, but there are some people who listen to just Info Dumpies where it's like, oh, okay. So, yeah, we're doing a brief history of sex toys.
Fun.
And I would like to actually thank one of our Patreon supporters and Discord members, Kate Michigus, for getting me a last piece of information that pushed this into a, now I have enough for a full episode of Info Dumpies, because I was in this weird spot where I had looked up a lot about dildos because of today's lucky winner, because we had one of our holiday specials was a fake Hallmark movie about a big city dildo maker. So I researched a lot about historic dildo stuff. It was too much for a mini dump. Not enough for a full episode. And then, yeah, Kate Michigus sent me a very good Wikipedia link that I was like, oh, whoa, cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I have so many topics that are like, it's just not quite enough for an Info Dumpies, but it's too much for a mini dump, you know?
Yeah. So this has now been pushed into full dump territory.
Hell yeah.
So I'm going to be talking about a bunch of historical accounts about sex toys, and I did also want to mention at the top of the episode that these historical accounts and the wordings on these things are cis and heteronormative as hell. You all know that's not how we roll here, so I'm just letting you know in advance that a lot of this language that gets used in these just doesn't take into account the existence of trans people whatsoever. And we here at Info Dumpies don't play that way. And we know gender is also a spectrum.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah. So at the top of the hour, I would like to say that because everything I found was just extremely heteronormative. So we're going to get into dildos first.
Usually it's the other way around.
Yeah, get them into us.
Sorry, there's going to be a lot of that, probably.
Oh, yeah, like a lot of it. Like, probably a whole lot. If you had to guess, how many years ago, what do you think the oldest dildo we've ever found was?
Oh, gosh.
Like, how old do you think that is?
I mean, I'm going to say probably, I mean, gosh, it must be Paleolithic, like ancient stone dildo.
You're getting warm.
Is it older?
You're very close. Like the heading I have for this is the Stone Ages.
Oh shit! More like the Bone Ages. Am I right?
So the oldest known dildo was made of siltstone, and it was around 30,000 years old.
Whoa! I don't know what era that is in history, but that's
the Stone Age.
Oh well, that makes sense.
It was found in a German cave in 2005.
You found Mrs. Flintstone's toy.
I mean, yeah, because siltstone is usually rougher and used in conjunction with a flintstone for starting fire. But the dildo they found was highly polished and smooth.
Oh, well, it would have to be. I was going to say, I hope it's not rough. It would have to be, yeah.
Many other Stone Age dildos have been found. This is just the oldest one. And many of which, because, you know, at one point people realized stone tools were not as great as iron tools. Many of the stone dildos they found show wear and tear from use at the tip.
Oh, wow. I mean, it makes sense, right? If you're in the Stone Age,
you don't
you're
going to
get some wear and tear.
You don't have Wi-Fi. What else are you going to fucking do?
Yeah, you never really think about wear and tear, the mileage on your toys, you know?
Yeah, right? Well, now we're going to fast forward to ancient Egypt. We're going to fast forward quite a bit.
Oh, okay, so I have a question about this. Mm-hmm. And you might be getting into this. I have heard, and I don't know if this is true, that like Cleopatra used to have like a jar of bees that she would use as a vibrator.
Yeah, that's apocryphal. I have that in here. It was said that she used a gourd full of bees as a vibrator. Apocryphal.
I was going to say, I don't think that would work.
No, also because the bees would die.
Yeah, the bees would die.
Pretty
and
quickly.
Also, yes, bees buzz, but also if you put them in a jar, the jar doesn't buzz.
It'd
right?
have to be like, a lot, like a whole fucking mosh
pit. There should be
so
many bees.
So that is apocryphal, but paintings from around 3000 BCE show women wearing large phallic objects around their waists to pay tribute to Osiris. Now, I looked to see why did Osiris care about a bunch of ladies walking around with their straps on outside their clothes? I don't fucking know. But I guess Osiris was chill. I was like, hell yeah, cool. Chill, cool as hell.
Oh yeah,
I dig it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it.
We should bring it back.
It's a fashion thing.
Get like a holster for it and just whoosh, bust it out.
Okay, now we're going to take a little trip to ancient Greece. This is where some of it gets pretty concerning.
Oh, wow. Yeah, if your Greece is ancient, you should replace it for something probably water-based.
There were breadsticks that were dick-shaped. Oh. And I'm gonna do my best with the name. I'm not Greek, and I don't really want your opinions on my pronunciation, because there's always someone in the comments, but Olisbokolikes, Olisbokolikes.
Sounds as right as anything. I don't know.
Olisbokolikes were dick-shaped breadsticks used in ancient Greece. You would use olive oil as lube. It was like a fucked up version of the panna olio at some Italian restaurants where they bring the bread and the olive oil to your table. Yeah.
No, this is yucky.
Yeah.
This is so bad.
Yeah, so
I
bad. Talk about a fucking yeast infection, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. God.
Fucking sourdough factory. Yeah.
Seriously. I would rather fuck a piece of siltstone, I think.
Genuinely.
Same. Yeah,
genuinely, yeah. So, in a more normal move, the ancient Greeks were also fans of olisboi, which were stuffed dicks made of polished leather.
Okay, that I think makes more sense.
That makes more sense. I'm less concerned about...
Obviously, very porous, right?
I'm less concerned about rodents.
Oh, God, I didn't even
crumbs.
Think about that.
Yeah, less concerned.
I mean,
so
let's back up a step, right? Sorry. How does it not get soggy? Is it like
I don't know.
It's bread. Does it how
I don't know.
I'm gonna have
a real fucked up search history later.
I'm gonna have nightmares about this.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So the ancient Greeks thought that the uterus needed sperm like vitamins.
Holy shit. That would be an amazing t-shirt. Like a raunchy t-shirt that just says, "My vagina needs sperm like vitamins." Oh my God.
And they thought that lack of that would cause hysteria or wandering uterus.
I'm sorry, wandering uterus?
Yes, that is what a lot of the time when we're talking about ancient folks claiming hysteria, they thought the uterus would just bop around the body. And that was causing this behavior almost in women.
Almost as if the uterus was more of a concept.
Yeah, just doing our own thing. Just doing our own thing in there.
Uterus is in retrograde.
Because of this, men who left for war would give their ladies a loose boy to tie them over until they got back. Now, I don't know how this helped, since the leather penis could most certainly not jizz, but whatever.
Yeah, that don't make no sense. Did they put jizz in it? Also, why is it called a Liz boy?
It's sounds O-L- like a... It's O Liz boy. No, O-L-I-S-B-O-I. Olis boy.
Olis boy. I thought you were saying Liz boy. And I was like, that sounds like an old handheld game system.
For lesbians.
For lesbians. The Les boy.
There are many other cultures that also had the dildo. People have been wanting to stick stuff up and in themselves forever, really. Yeah. Couldn't possibly cover all of them. Those are some of the highlights. But we're going to talk about the prohibition of dildos.
Oh, wow.
Of course, the first people to say enough of these were the British.
Of course.
British listeners. In 1670, English customs began seizing dildos at customs. Yeah.
I don't know why, but the term seizing dildos.
Seizing like, dildos. Like seize the day. Firmly grasp the dildos. Italy was the biggest manufacturer of dildos at the time.
Oh.
This led to English folks calling them Signor Dildos.
Signor Dildos?
Signor Dildos. As the concept of a fake dick was inextricably linked to Italy in their minds.
Huh. It sounds fancy to have... Oh, I've got a fancy Italian dildo.
Signor Dildo.
Is it signor or is it signore? I don't know Italian.
S-I-G-N-O-R. It's Mr. Dildo.
Oh yeah, Italian. Mr. Dildo. Yeah.
Yeah, it's Mr. Dildo. Which is actually a cute name.
Honestly, yeah. Yeah.
So, John Wilmot. Mr. Dildo.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be great. So, John Wilmot was the Earl of Rochester, who wrote a poem called Signor Dildo, in which he bitched about English women liking dildos better than English men's flesh wieners.
So,
which the prohibition of dildos was largely because cis men were so uncomfortable with the idea that women could get off without needing them. Lord. And everything was, they're replacing us. If you look at stuff like, and I'm going to get into the Kama Sutra in my next section, but also some older Shuga art from Japan, dildos are seen worn by presumably cis men and used by cis men as a, hey, this is a way you can additionally please your lady even when your wiener is not cooperating.
Oh, cool.
So definitely a different vibe. You can tell where the Christian church was more influential by who was like, no, you're replacing our wieners.
Right.
In the United States, in the 1800s, the Comstock laws banned the sale of rubber dilators. But like... all stuff that you stick inside of you, there was a big underground market for them.
Oh, sure. There's always going to be, I imagine.
And oddly enough, there was not the same anxiety seen over vibrators, since they were seen as a medical device, which is going to be an ongoing theme.
Oh, curious. How interesting.
So, naturally, from the dildo, we're going to talk about the strap-on dildo.
Love it.
So, one of the earliest mentions of a leather strap-on, the Kama Sutra, actually encouraged men to use a strap-on if they couldn't get hard.
Oh, cool.
To continue to please their ladies.
And that's still an option for all of you listening out there.
Yeah, it's still an option. So now we're going to get to meet some pervert called the Bishop of Worms.
So you're telling me there's an incel from Britain named Rochester, and now we're getting into the Bishop of Worms.
His name wasn't Rochester.
I know, I'm just keeping on you.
Oh, that's a good name. That's my buddy Rochester.
he's just like, it's Rochester. It's Rochester.
In 1023, there was a bishop in the imperial city in the Holy Roman Empire of Worms. So Worms is a city. Was a city named Burchard of Worms. In 1023, Burchard published the Decretum, which was a collection of canon laws. Book 19 of the Decretum was called the Corrector. This book was full of questions for priests to ask at confessions, and it offered suggested penance for those sins that were confessed, including sexual ones. This is where Worm Boy said the following: "Have you done what certain women are accustomed to do, that is, to make some sort of device or implement in the shape of the male member, of the size to match your desire, and you have fastened it to the area of your genitals or those of another with some form of fastenings, and you have fornicated with other women or others have done with a similar instrument or another sort with you? If you have done this, you shall do penance for 5 years on legitimate holy days."
Wow.
5 years of penance for strapping someone once.
Or getting strapped, it sounds like.
Or getting strapped. I'm going to live forever.
Honestly.
I'm going to live forever.
Yeah.
I'm unkillable.
So wait, 5 years of penance? So like, it's good? It's a good thing to do?
No.
Or, wait.
No, you have to, you are punished.
Oh,
and have
okay.
to
I
make
thought
up for
like-
it.
I thought you were saying it counts as 5 years of penance. Like,
if you've strapped somebody once or you've been strapped once, that is 5 years of time of like probation from God that you're on for the one time.
Straight to space jail with you.
Wow. But I just love the description that he gives us. You know, if you make a wiener however big you want, and then
someone else has
made the wiener, and one of you or the other one, and right. It's like, okay, Worm Boy. It just really gives the energy of, you ever do gay shit?
You could tell me
I'm a priest.
Yeah, right. It's just like an overly detailed description of the various ways one could engage in gay shit.
Right.
Yeah.
Too descriptive. Like, are you on top or her on top? Yeah. Or just or like asking in such detail.
If you are wearing the strap and then there's another person, guy or girl, on top of you or non-binary in there.
It's 1023.
Yeah.
It's 1023. I totally know the term non-binary. I'm ancient Roman.
Oh, yeah.
I am the Bishop of Worms.
Yeah,
So now we're going to get into the modern strap-on. We're jumping way ahead in time.
Oh, cool.
This is where strap-ons as we know them came into being. At this point, sex toys were illegal in the U.S. unless they were being used as medical devices.
Why?
Because our country is a place where people who thought England wasn't puritanical enough moved to.
Oh.
To take the yeah. place over and be more puritanical.
True.
It was illegal for a long time in Texas, like up until I think 2002.
I remember hearing about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And even in the time we lived in Texas, there was a law that was like, if you have six or more, that is intent to distribute or something, like you have weed and there's like a certain number of dildos one person is not supposed to legally own. And yeah. I would joke, is it in a household or per person?
Yeah, I had a friend who was a manager at a sex shop, per my intro anecdote, and she would very often come home with boxes of sex toys that basically yeah. she wasn't allowed to sell because they were sun damaged, because the store was in Texas and they didn't have any UV filter on the windows. So nobody would buy the boxes that were sun damaged. So she would just get to take the products home. She had like boxes and boxes and boxes of sex toys.
She might have been breaking the law.
Almost certainly. In
Almost
some way.
Certainly. When they were still illegal in the entire country, not just Texas, Ted Marsh, a ventriloquist, started manufacturing strap-on dildos.
Talk about a career change.
Marketing them as a marital aid. The strap-ons he made were hollow and intended to be used by someone with a penis, and they came in the same flesh tones as the ventriloquist dolls he was making.
Oh.
Already had the supplies.
Hold on. Okay, so let me get this straight. So he basically said, I like making puppets talk. What if I made it so the puppet was not a puppet?
I helped people.
But you could put your penis in it.
And helped people fuck.
Yeah. You put your yeah. you put your penis in it.
Instead of slipping my hand up the puppet's ass, I'm going to slip my dick into this flesh-colored
so
tube.
This guy fucked his puppets, right? Like, that's how he...
I don't want to accuse. I don't want to
Fair.
Tell
Fair.
Tales outside of school. I don't know.
Fair.
But this was in the late 60s. And Marsh Manufacturing began pumping these puppies out with a 24-person team on Hollywood Boulevard. The dildos came in four sizes, from 5 to 9 inches long.
Oh, wow. Sorry, the phrase pumping these puppies out. It's like, I'm sure the puppies were pumping, you know. I'm sure people enjoyed them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was the interior like a standard size, I guess? And then the exterior was...
I don't know what the diameter of these things was like. So I don't know if you might be, you know, running into an issue where you're like, hey, I am either too girthy or not girthy enough for the hollow dildo. Yeah. I don't know.
Wild.
It just said the sizes were from 5 to 9 inches long. It said nothing about girth. It's a good question.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And also, I don't really know what ventriloquist dummies are made of. Is it like wood or... plastic or
I do not know, but the next guy we're gonna get to is the first one who seems to have made them out of body safe silicone. Mm. So wasn't that
oh boy,
wasn't that yeah. Gosnell Duncan was a California man who became a paraplegic after a work accident. Duncan attended a disability conference in 1971 where he asked other disabled folks if they'd use strap-on dildos for sex if they were made to accommodate their needs. Hmm. And of course, a bunch of horned-up disabled people said, hell yeah, Gosnell, get that shit going. So Duncan got to work in his basement using body-safe silicone to make his prototypes. His company was called Paramount Therapeutic Products. These dildos were solid, made to sit above the pubic bone, making them more accessible to folks who might be wheelchair users.
Oh, very cool.
And have mobility issues. Because, yeah, if it hangs right where a penis would and you are not able to get up from your seated position and you have limitations for how you can move, like, yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
And Duncan would actually take the customer's measurements and custom make the strap to fit them specifically.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, so regardless of why they were in the wheelchair, whatever their needs are, they had a custom fit, which I think is really cool.
Hell yeah.
I think it's really neat. While most of his initial purchasers were disabled men, lesbians heard and came out of the woodwork to support his business too and were like, I'm interested in trying some of your products.
I can imagine someone being like, oh, a bespoke strap? Don't mind if I do.
A bespoke wiener? Yeah. Huh. So now we're going to talk about the vibrator. There's also some apocrypha out there about the vibrator.
I bet.
So a vibrator was invented in the late 19th century.
So late. Wow.
This was decades before it had sexual connotations. It was marketed as being used for wrinkles, headaches, stomach problems, constipation, arthritis, and even on World War I soldiers as vibrotherapy in English and French hospitals in Serbia.
Oh, okay, so as like a body massager or internally?
No, like as a use this on your body to fix these things.
Okay. I was like,
not even as a massage, but more the vibrations will do the thing.
That makes more sense. I was thinking like, if I am a World War II soldier and someone says, "I got the solution for you, buddy," I'm gonna be like, well,
"It's called a Hitachi magic wand. Yeah, it's gonna blow your fucking mind,
like,
man."
And I'll be like, "I'm not opposed to it, but also I don't know if this is gonna help my gunshot wound."
I was about to say, listen, sounds cool as hell, but I did get shot, so...
Yeah.
I love cranking my hog, but I would love you to apply pressure to this wound. Thank you.
Also a great shirt. For the EMTs out there.
So, by around 1900, vibrators began being marketed for home use. The Vibratile was advertised in McClure's magazine for nerve pain, headache, and wrinkles.
Interesting.
These were available mostly through mail order through the early 1920s. But in the mid-1920s, this changed. The people who were buying those vibrators through the mail, using them for wrinkles, at some point, many of them went, you know what I could use it on? You know, let me try something out.
You know what's got a lot of wrinkles?
you know what this could be good for? So this is when vibrators started appearing in porn. This is the mid-1920s.
Oh, interesting.
And after that, the ads for them disappeared because it was harder when it is something that appears in porn and you're living in a place where it's only allowed to be a medical device. It was getting those companies some attention where they're like, okay, maybe I don't. Maybe they think I'm selling a sex thing. So it wouldn't be until the 1960s that we saw ads for them again. And by that time, they were like, stick this on your clit and go wild. That's just like by the 60s, they're like, we know why you're buying this. Go nuts. Yeah. Have a great time. It's fun. Do it.
Was it still illegal at that point?
I think it really depended on where you were at that point.
Okay.
So, like, I think it was in Texas, in a lot of southern states. And of course, I'm sure there are people buying it secretly. But yeah, I think it really depended on where you were. Much of the history of the vibrator that we see in pop culture is actually the plot of the film Hysteria, which is a fictionalization of Joseph Mortimer Granville's invention of the vibrator. This film supposes that doctors would bring women to orgasm in clinic as a means to treat hysteria, but it is a fictionalization.
Yeah, that sounds like the setup for a bad porno.
And this also is further permeated through pop culture by the very popular play In the Next Room, aka the Vibrator Play, by Sarah Rule. This is a pop culture thing that we have no evidence this happened, but it was fictionalized in such a way that people are like, oh, this movie seems like it's pretty accurate, but it's not.
Oh.
It's not a historical retelling. Now we're going to move on to butt plugs, thanks to Kate Michigoose, because this is the stuff that she posted in the Discord server that I was like, oh, yeah, I could tack this onto that episode. That's a full-ass episode. So thank you for this, Kate. Thank you for the butt plugs.
Amazing.
Amazing. So butt plugs, like everything else we've talked about today, were marketed as a medical device at first. Have you heard of Dr. Young's ideal rectal dilators?
No. I'm glad that they're ideal. I would hate to have an unideal rectal dilator.
Yes, because these ones are so ideal, they treat both insanity and constipation.
Now, hold on. What if I'm so constipated I'm going insane?
Well, and also, you're plugging the place the poop comes out of.
I think the idea is that, like, you plug it up for a certain amount of time.
And then pop it out and try to shit?
I guess. I don't know. Yeah, this is pretty wild. Was it advertised to just, like, regardless of gender?
It was mostly advertised to men.
Oh, interesting.
But it was just advertised as a medical device. So these were sold from the late 19th century to at least the 1940s. This was an era where patent medicine was big, and patent medicine devices were especially big. Mm-hmm. So people were coming up with all sorts of weird, take this home, take care of your health devices for people that were doing random shit that didn't actually do anything.
Yeah.
And Dr. Young basically
snake oil.
Yeah, yeah, mechanical snake oil. And this is also the time where a lot of that snake oil stuff was coming in, like the actual take my miracle elixir sort of thing.
Right, right, right.
Dr. Young just made a patent medical device you stick in your ass.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you even really need a patent for that, but I guess...
The patent thing would be very important. The patent thing...
Oh, really? Well, I guess there would be a lot of copycats.
The patent thing would become very important here in a little bit. So they came in sets of four in varying diameters, ranging from half an inch in diameter to 4 inches in diameter.
Holy moly!
They were marketed as being torpedo-like hard rubber.
So... It sounds like no flared base.
Yes, flared base. So.
Oh, okay. Thank God.
Yeah, I will send you a link so you can see Dr. Young's incredible invention.
Okay. Yeah, I was very concerned for a moment because when I imagine a torpedo, I don't really imagine a flared base necessarily, but I might be wrong. I may be totally off base on that, but gosh, torpedo-like and hard rubber. Whew.
Yes. So there is a flared base. Dr. Young thought about this. So, I mean, they look like butt plugs.
Oh, no. Oh, no. It's working. It's opening in my work browser. No, 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 no.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. I don't need that in my work browser history. Okay. We're good. That was close.
It's a close one.
Dr. Young's ideal work.
Yeah. So, So those, they're just butt plugs. Ain't changed much.
Oh. So interesting. The grip looks like it's like a put it between your fingers kind of grip.
Yeah, yeah. Fucking wild. Just your set of plugs.
Curious.
So in a medical news, and medical news is capitalized because that was the medical journal, which is called Medical News. In a medical news article from 1893, the article stated that Dr. Young himself, in a completely different journal, had praised the rectal dilator's effect on insanity by saying the following: 3/4 of all the howling maniacs of the world were curable in a few weeks' time by the application of orificial methods.
Well, okay, so I have to imagine there were probably people that were skeptical of this, right?
Yes, the person writing this medical news article in 1893 was skeptical.
Yeah. Well,
in the same quote, Dr. Young mentioned that some patients were sent into a panic by the sight of the dilators.
Maybe not the smallest or even the second smallest, but number four is intimidating.
Big. You got to work your way up to that one. That's not a starter plug.
Yeah.
No,
that's the kind of thing you look at and go, oh, that's not going in my butt, certainly.
Yeah, that's for, you know, someone who's like pro gamer level strats and butt stuff kind of level of plug. Yeah. So Dr. Young said that some patients were sent into a panic, but then in the 1940s, the FDA was like, hold on. You're claiming these do what? So the FDA came down on Dr. Young's butt plugs, saying the claims were unsubstantiated. The label said it could help the following things in that there was no danger in using them too much or keeping them in too long.
Trying to put myself in the shoes of like a 1905 person, I have to imagine that sticking something in my butt and leaving it for an indeterminate amount of time...
For your insanity.
Probably not going to be great.
Yeah, the FDA came down on him because, for one, he said there was no danger in using them too much. And the FDA said, oh, there absolutely is. And then he also claimed that they Now let me hit this list. Corrected constipation promoted more refreshing sleep and could relieve foul breath, bad taste in the mouth, sallow skin, acne, anemia, lassitude, mental hebetude, insomnia, anorexia, headaches, diarrhea, hemorrhoids, flatulence, indigestion, nervousness, irritability, cold extremities, and numerous other ailments.
Huh. Okay, so I do know what lassitude means. I think it means like fatigue or tiredness.
Clearly a butt plug is the answer.
I wouldn't say so.
Yeah, myself. I wouldn't either.
Foul breath? Foul bad taste breath? In the mouth?
Right?
Is that a diagnosis even?
Halitosis.
Do you need a cure for that? Well, true. I meant the bad taste in mouth, more less than the halitosis.
I mean, sticking a plug in my butt would not be how I fix that.
Yeah, not me.
I'd probably go brush my teeth.
How the fuck is it going to cure your acne? Like, what is it? What is sticking something in your butt going to do for your fucking acne, Dr. Young?
You know, as someone who did suffer from horrible cystic acne until I got stuff figured out, you get desperate enough that you're like, yeah, maybe sticking this in my ass will do it. Not going to make it any worse.
What? Yeah, maybe it's just he picked a list of things that are really persnickety to actually resolve in a permanent sense.
So they have to keep using them. I don't know. Yeah. I wanted to cap off this episode by, I wanted to top off this episode, trying to think of a sex pun for this, with a couple of things. In my research, I found some stuff that says that straight people are less likely to utilize sex toys.
Hmm.
And on the off chance you are a straight person listening to this, I don't think that's a lot of our audience. I'll be real with you. Go explore some stuff.
Yeah. There's a whole world out there.
Yeah. For you by yourself, for you with a partner, for you with multiple partners, for you with however you're rolling. I think we live in such a, especially Americans, live in such a society shaped by, this is going to sound like a tangent, Calvinist ideals. There's nothing wrong with you for wanting to crank your hog or sticking stuff up your butt.
It's totally normal. It's normal to do this stuff. And even if you don't, it's still normal, right? But still, if you do want to do it. And go to your local sex shop, find a random person, approach them. No, just kidding.
Well, I actually wanted to promote our local sex shop. We don't take ads.
Oh, yeah.
This is not, nobody's paying me for this. This is not really an ad. Smitten Kitten here in Minneapolis has been doing more to help our community than the actual mayor. They have a rent relief program where they are helping people pay their rent because a lot of the immigrants in our community have not felt safe to go to work, have not made money, and are struggling. And Smitten Kitten has consistently been doing the work to make sure that people in Minneapolis have a home still, have food, have the supplies they need. They are a mutual aid hub, and they're doing incredible work. When ICE first invaded the city, Smitten Kitten basically wasn't a sex shop anymore for a little bit and was just there to help collect supplies for people who are not safe to leave their homes. And they've been dealing with a lot of bullshit from just MAGA chuds. And you can order from them online.
Yeah, I love Smitten Kitten. They're
you
amazing.
Also can give to their rent relief fund online now. So I would encourage you to go support a sex shop full of very good people who have tirelessly been trying to take care of our community. Get something fun to experiment with and chip some money into the rent fund to help some immigrants here in Minneapolis make sure their rent is paid.
Yeah, they also post a lot on Instagram. Under Smitten Kitten, of course.
They do.
And talk a lot about what they're doing.
Yeah, I discovered them because they followed the Mix No More Instagram account. And I was like, oh, you're local.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you look cool. Oh, Violet, let's go check this place out. So, yeah.
Yeah. So not only are they doing a ton of really important work to help the community, they just also happen to have a really amazing selection of dailies that you should check out.
Yeah, they had a really fun event because someone started a rumor that there was a glory hole at the store, and there's no glory hole at the store, but the rumor got so big and they went viral for posting about it that they did the glory hole games, and it was cornhole but with dildos and butt plugs.
So
and you
funny.
Could win stuff. Yeah, they're really fun. Yeah. And even before ICE invaded the city, they've have a snack shelf for houseless neighbors to pick up some food and get warm. Yeah. And they have free like COVID supplies, free gender affirming care items. They have all of these free resources for the community. It's just a great place.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's how I'm going to end the episode. So yeah, maybe I'll do a part two where I'm like, anal bleeds. Jesus Christ.
Oh, not God.
Anal
maybe
bleeds.
Not that one.
Not anal bleeds. God, no.
I would be curious about a part two that would maybe include, and maybe I'll do it, I don't know, a history of the fleshlight.
That's another one that
stroker.
I was... Yeah, the stroker. So... Brom Stroker. Someone's done that.
Oh, that's a good drag king name. Although
yeah.
it's so close. It's almost too close.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. But yeah, maybe there'll be a part two about like anal beads, strokers. You know, just come up with some other fun stuff.
Yeah.
Fucking machines.
Yeah, yeah. Sounding rod.
And if you don't know what any of those are, and you're curious, just do an incognito tab to go look those up, my friend.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't use Chrome. I would use something like DuckDuckGo, to be honest.
I was DickDickGo.
Something. Get yourself a smooth pink duck.
The fuck duck.
The fuck duck.
Friends, before I get to thanking our Patreon supporters, I'd like to make you aware of a mutual aid opportunity. If you go to the show details, you'll find a link to our merch hub. Our merch hub is BelanaArts.com, and if you go there, you will find a sticker that says Fuck ICE. This was designed by Violet, and 100% of the proceeds of this sticker go towards mutual aid here in Minneapolis. Minneapolis is still struggling because of Operation Metro Surge and ICE invading our city. Our piece of shit little worthless mayor completely squashed an eviction moratorium. So there are a lot of people here who are struggling with housing now because of it, because there's been no relief. So it is our responsibility as people who live here in Minneapolis to help out, and this is one of the ways we're doing it. So if you would like to help our neighbors, you can go to the Blonde Arts merch hub and purchase the Fuck ICE sticker. Donations from that will be made to CanMN, which is a mutual aid network here in the Minneapolis area, who does great work making sure people have the essentials they need to live. I will be posting on both the Mixnomer Instagram page and my own Instagram page whenever we make a donation. And yeah, go check out. You can go get a very cool sticker. It's shiny. It says Fuck ICE. And you can support my neighbors. And now I'd like to thank our Patreon supporters, like Patch, Harlene, Bethany, Laura Kramer, Lilith Rain, Anarchista, Percy, Nunya B, Kate Michigoose, K-Genius, Chibs1012, Dave Perrell, Megan E, Carl Brooks, Natasha Neves, Gus, Lutzi, Helen Clifford, Sewing Seraph, Rachel Rachelson, and Fintago. If you want to help us out here in the InfoDumpies crew, you can tell other people about the show. We don't take paid ads. We don't pay for advertising. We grow entirely by word of mouth, and you are the people who do that for us. If you appreciate having a show that doesn't have ads all up in its business, and it's, you know, 40% of the show is ads, you can show us your appreciation by advertising for us, quite frankly, because, yeah, like, it's not easy not taking ads, and I would rather spend money upgrading people's equipment than paying for ads. So y'all help us out a lot. Also, my autistic ass can't network and make shows at the same time. I would get so burnt out trying to schmooze with other podcasters, do a bunch of that stuff. So honestly, you're helping me from a disability standpoint promote the work we do whenever you tell other people about the shows. If you want to help us out even more, you can subscribe on your podcatcher of choice. You can also leave a nice rating, comment, or review on your podcatcher of choice, whichever interactions they support. If you can do all of them, that would be extremely helpful. More action on the podcatchers, more interaction with our RSS feed gets us recommended to folks who like similar shows, makes the show look more active to people who might be, you know, perusing their podcatcher for more shows, and shows that the people who listen to it are interested and invested and active, and maybe they should listen to it too. If you're in a place to help us out monetarily, you can go to the show details to find a link to the Mixnomer Patreon page. That's going to get you bonus content for everything we do here at Mixnomer, with info dumpies, all of the back catalog of today's Lucky Winner bonus stuff. You get Murphy Bay Magic bonus stuff. We are currently working on a sci-fi show called Rampage Ministry. You will get bonus stuff for that as it comes out, depending on the level, including notes, slowly released notes for the con lang I'm writing for that show. So yeah, if you want to help us out and you want to throw a buck or two our way, you can go to the show details and find a link to the Mixnomer Patreon page and help us out. And if you want to hang out with us, you can come join our Discord server. It's a great gang of people. It's really fun. Coming up here in a few weeks, I think I will be doing a stream where I play the crunchy as fuck Buffy the Vampire Slayer Xbox game from 2002. Everyone looks so weird in that game, but yeah, I played it a little bit and I'm decent enough to do a stream. Violet will be doing a stream coming up playing Funny Raccoon Game. We're going to be playing Jackbox games coming up. We have a regular craft club we do once a month on a Saturday night. It's really fun. It's the most supportive gang of sweethearts I could have ever hoped for in that Discord server. And yeah, if you want to come hang out with us, you should go to the show details and find that link and hop aboard. But that's all I've got for you this time, my friends. Until next time, clever sign off.